Today's program is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. For more information, visit mofad.org.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to a brand new episode of Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer. And today I'm going to be speaking with Val Nassetta, who is a raccoon rescuer out of upstate New York. So we're going to talk all about raccoons, what they do, all that good stuff. So we're just going to get started. So Val, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Hope we don't get disconnected. I've had a few little blinks of my power here, and I think, uh-oh, not today.
Well, if it happens, it happens, and it's okay. So it's all good. But I want to get started with you. I'm really excited about this show. I've been looking for a raccoon person for actually about 2 years now. And so thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Yes, I've kept myself pretty well hidden.
Yeah, I know. You're really secret up there. It was great, though. I was glad to find you. And I want to give out a big shout out to our friend John Walters, who made this possible. So I wanted to say thank you to him as well. So let's start off at the basics. So what does it do? What do you do when it comes to raccoons?
Well, actually, I mostly try to give a lot of different advice from callers. I do to my home and care for them until they're able to be re-released into the wild. That in itself is something different.
And so how long have you been doing this?
Well, I usually like to tell people I've been doing it since birth, but and I sort of have, but basically with raccoons and wildlife rehab, it's been about 40 years.
Wow. And so when you're rescuing, I mean, you're up in upstate New York. When you're doing this rescue work, are all your animals local?
Most are. Well, depending, with the raccoons and stuff, we can only take them in from our counties, or at least get permission to take them in from other counties, but they are supposed to be released back in the county where they came from.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there are restrictions. We're not allowed to take anything off of Long, you know, off of the island,
mm-hmm.
from Manhattan or Long Island, Staten Island, you know, any of those places without written permission. So.
Wow. Why is that?
Why is that?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it has to do with politics, I guess, and then the rest of it, I do understand there are different diseases and genetic things that are kind of localized.
Mm-hmm.
So to bring them into a naive population, you know, you risk spreading things that you don't want to spread.
Makes sense.
So, you know, that part of it I understand. Some of it is just, you know, like I said, like ferrets were not allowed in New York City for years and years, too, and that was kind of silly. And they're still not allowed in California, which is even sillier.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, it,
what?
They have a big group of legalized ferrets.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the secret ferret laws in New York. It's like they're legal in New York City, but, I mean, there's a lot of them here. So it's kind of one of those kind of things. But ferrets are easy because you can hide them, you know.
Yes. Well, the silly thing with New York City is that they would be great for mouse and rat, you know, control.
Yeah, no kidding, right? And right now we got a really good rat population going. So it'd be really nice to get some help with that. That wasn't just spreading poison everywhere, you know?
But then again, raccoons are pretty good with mouse and rat control and other vermin, too. So.
Are they really?
Oh, they really are. The problem in New York City, well, I'm sure they do eat a lot of the rats and mice and other types of rodents, but the people have such great eating habits and takeout foods.
Oh, yeah.
That we kind of had gourmet raccoons, I think, in the
totally
city these days. You know, I mean, it's pretty good pickings, I guess. So
it definitely is. I mean, there's a squirrel in my neighborhood, and he lives mostly on, like, pizza, and I've seen him with, like, McDonald's bags of French fries. I mean, I'm sure the thing hasn't had a nut since he was born, you know. He's in everyone's trash can every day getting out good things.
McDonald's French fries are probably one of the number one junk foods for raccoons and pizza. They love the pizza crust.
That's so funny. So when you're getting the raccoons, are they all injured?
No. In fact, very few were actually injured. What I usually get in are young babies, anywhere from newborns up to, say, 7, 8, 9 weeks old, that for one reason or another, they, you know, they don't have their mother. Mm-hmm. Most is due to the fact that homeowners, not knowing that they've got babies in their attic or wherever, either trap and remove the mother themselves, or they hire a trapper to do that for them, and then 3 or 4 days later, they hear this tremendous amount of noise.
Oh, no.
And discover that now they've got 4 or 5 babies in their attic, that, and no mom.
Oh, wow.
So I would say the biggest majority that we get in are that way.
Wow.
A few times moms are moving them, and she can only move one at a time.
Yeah.
So the babies will start squawking, or she'll drop one because something scares her.
Mm-hmm.
And we get those. I mean, I do get in injured ones, but not very often. In the young ones, maybe a fall if they fall down through the wall, something like that. But most of them, what I get in are just simply babies that
just don't have a mama. That's so sad.
The little bit older ones, when we get farther into the season, that are out and about. Yes, we get some in from falls. We get on the road and. Mm-hmm. And killed, and then the babies all pile up with the mom, and then, you know, they get killed, too.
So, oh, God.
So those are the type of things that I get in.
And then we were speaking last week, and I wanted you to tell our listeners about an infant raccoon, because I was blown away by this. I just assumed that a raccoon, when it was born, was completely on its own and totally independent.
No, I think only guinea pigs qualify for that.
Really?
Come out walking and eating.
Mm-hmm.
So, baby raccoons are born with their eyes closed and no fur. They probably only weigh maybe 3 ounces.
Oh, wow.
They don't open their eyes until they're around 3 weeks old.
Wow.
They start to get their little baby milk teeth when they're maybe 4 or 5 weeks old.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't start eating out of a dish until they're probably are eating solid foods. Anyway, until they're maybe 12, 14 weeks.
Wow.
They stay with the mom pretty much for a good 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of split up and separate a little bit, and then they get back together and den up for the winter.
Oh, you're kidding.
And until she's, you know, if she gets pregnant again, she's, you know, she's due to deliver her next litter, out they go. And so sometimes that's when we get a few in the spring, too, these 4 babies that are now almost a year old.
Mm.
Mom just throws them out.
Oh, Lord. I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Well, it's kind of like the mother bird throwing the babies out of the nest. I think that's why they separate and then get back together.
Mm-hmm.
So that they've got an idea on where everything is, what's what, and how, you know, how to survive. It's just they think they would much rather go back up the tree or back up into the attic with Mom. You know, it was warm and cozy. And
yeah, totally.
You know, it's like your own kids. They leave, and they come back, and then they leave again. So I think it's...
just part of the plan.
But the gestation period's about 65 days, kind of like a dog.
Okay.
And a lot of similarities there, although they only have one litter a year. There's exceptions where if she's lost the litter, forget in the fall, but that's not very usual.
Mm.
But pretty much, they're like everything else. Even the vets are kind of stunned at what they expect when they're doing stuff like that.
And so, like, what are when the raccoons get together in the winter, what do they do for the winter?
Did you say when they were at my house or after they were released?
Once they're released, like, what does a wild raccoon do in the winter? Do they hibernate, or do they just kind of deal with everything?
They're not true hibernators, but sure, there's a lot of animals that don't make it through the winter if we have a really bad winter.
Yeah.
Weren't able to get the weight on them or had something that disrupted their pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually kind of skinny when, you know, in the spring when they come out and have to, you know, eat a lot to get caught back up again.
Yep.
But they don't hibernate truly. Well, even bears don't hibernate truly either. They do get up and move about some. And bears give birth while they're hibernating.
Oh, you're kidding.
Or so to, you know, speak, that's what they do anyway.
Yeah, that's wild.
And woodchucks probably are more hibernators than any. Their body temperatures drop. They go into torpor.
Oh, wow.
So they're I would say they're probably the closest to hibernators that we've got.
Okay.
Chipmunks and those kind of things that go underground, they have caches of food, and they wake up periodically and go to their kitchen and eat underground and then go back to the bedroom and go back to sleep.
That's funny.
Because I had one once that I thought was dying because it was trying to hibernate, and I didn't know it.
Oh, no.
You learn.
I had no idea chipmunks did any of that, so I'm kind of blown away by that, too. I would have done the same thing. I'd be like, you've got to get up. You have to eat. It's like, lady, I'm fine.
I'd warm it up, and it would be fine.
That's funny.
And it would run around, and it would eat, and then I'd go in there the next day, and it would look like it was dead again.
Oh, God.
So I'm glad raccoons don't do that. And when I went and have overwintered them, if they were late born babies or they had health problems or they just don't eat as much or as often, but they're quite resourceful.
Yeah, thanks to, as we said before, too, the only real raccoon education I ever got was from the book Rascal that I think every single person in the U.S. has read at some point or another on a book list. And, you know, I knew that they eat fish, and I knew that they can do shrimp, too, and things like that. But I had no idea that they would eat rodents and, like, land animals as well. I thought they were more vegetarian.
Now, they're truly omnivores.
Cool.
They, in fact, the most of the weight they put on in the fall is from nuts.
Makes sense.
And acorns and that kind of stuff, and corn in the fields. They love corn on the cob. They eat bird eggs. They eat insects.
Okay, so yeah, they really do eat everything that's out there then.
Recent studies have even said that while grooming, they eat a large number of ticks.
Really?
Which, you know, to me is a wonderful
stop
because
great.
Of all the different diseases, you know, the tick-borne diseases. If more power to them to go out there and eat all those ticks.
So, like, can raccoons get Lyme disease? Like, do they get those tick-borne diseases?
They can get some of them. I think that they don't get as many as they become immune. But it's kind of hard to tell because there's not any real long-term studies done with, you know, populations where you're checking the same animals over and over again.
Yeah.
Because they just haven't been able to do that. For example, West Nile disease, they have discovered that raccoons have had West Nile. When they just been brought them in for different testing, they've just run that test and found that too. So,
wow,
I think they probably get more diseases that we get that we know that can possibly imagine that they do.
Funny,
but anything that keeps us from getting them is certainly a big plus.
Yeah, I'm all over that. Anything that eats ticks, I think we should have lots of and everywhere, frankly.
But they eat carrion, roadkill.
Really.
In fact, sometimes this is how a lot of different animals get killed on the road. It's because they're out trying to eat, but has been killed on the road, and then another car comes along, kills them too. But they almost all do that.
That's so
raccoons
sad.
Would prefer not to have to go out and physically kill something.
Okay.
They're more opportunists.
I like them already.
If somebody else has already killed it, they'll eat it.
That's cool.
You know, if they have to, they will. I mean, they will hunt.
Right.
Because they're omnivores, they very rarely have to because they can eat something else.
Totally.
A true meat eater is going to have a lot of meat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They won't eat anything else. But the raccoons have got such a varied diet. But this probably explains why they've done so well.
Yeah.
You know, and carrying on and living with the expanding, you know, their habitat destruction with the people moving farther and farther and farther out into the country.
Yeah.
And that really is kind of left two distinct different kinds of raccoons. We've got the country raccoons, which really only depend on nature for their food, and the city-dwelling raccoons, which they depend on rodent population, bird populations, people putting out food for their dogs, their cats.
Yep.
The delicious, you know, dumpster food, the waste the kids drop food, they go out and eat half a sandwich.
Yeah, totally, totally.
You go for a picnic and you leave all that stuff behind.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the city raccoons wouldn't do well trapped and moved to the country.
God, they wouldn't have the fur. They wouldn't know anything to do. It'd be like, where's the trash cans? Where's the subway? This is terrible. I don't know where anything is.
Actually, I get so many calls from the people saying, oh, there's a raccoon down here in the city. It needs to be trapped and taken to the country where it belongs. And I said, well, that raccoon is doing quite well there. So obviously it belongs there, and it would really probably die if we trapped it and moved it.
You know, that's funny. It's a really, really good point, because it's the same as people. Like, you know, you stick people in the country, they're going to live a different way than people do in the city. They're going to eat differently. Their entire lives are going to be different due to convenience and, you know, vicinity and how close the store is, for example, or that kind of thing. So it's really, I've never crossed my mind, but yeah, like a country raccoon coming into the city would be, you know, roadkill within 10 minutes, basically.
They would have no idea. I mean, the raccoons there use the sewer system,
yep,
to, you know, to go in as their private little, you know, tunnels, and they live in the subway system.
So funny.
That they know exactly where everything is.
Yeah.
And they know how to get there. If somebody brings a country raccoon into the city, he would have no idea that the cars, the people would scare him to death.
Yeah, totally.
And he wouldn't have any idea what some of that food even was.
That's very, very true.
You know, so that, it's a hard thing to describe to people, because they see a wild animal and they think, oh, it doesn't belong here, the poor thing.
Yeah.
We've got to get it back home.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain to them that that is home.
It's a really, really good point.
It's like it's the home to them. They don't want to go to the country.
Well, Val, we need to take a quick break, so we are going to pause for a minute and a half. I am speaking to Val Nassetta all about raccoon rescue and raccoons. So we'll be back in about a minute and a half, so just stay on.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TaxStar, and this track is called Pianissimo Short.
There are over 50,000 Chinese-American restaurants in the U.S. That's more than three times the number of McDonald's. How did Chinese-American food become so popular? And what's the story behind their unique menu of dishes like egg rolls and General's Chicken? Brooklyn's Museum of Food and Drink is going to explain it all with our next exhibition, Chow, the Making of Chinese-American Cuisine, featuring tastings, beautiful artifacts, and live demos of a fortune cookie machine. Visit chow.mofad.org to learn more, get advanced tickets, and help us make this exhibition a reality. Again, that's the Museum of Food and Drink at chow.mofad.org.
And we are back. I am talking to Val Nassetta all about raccoons and raccoon rescue, and she's based out of upstate New York. Val, I have a question for you that, you know, when people hear raccoons, the first thing they think is rabies. Is this really something that's hand in hand?
No. After that is a real, real myth. Well, you shouldn't handle any animal you don't know.
That's true.
Whether it's a raccoon or a dog or a cat or anything, if you don't know the animal.
So, for example, if someone does find an animal or a raccoon that is in distress, I mean, what should they do?
Well, again, that will depend on the distress. If they can, try to get advice first, because a lot of times, like, it's sitting there by itself, or there's two babies
mm-hmm.
and no mom. Well,
mm-hmm.
The mom may be close by and is just waiting for you to move on so she can come get her baby.
Mm.
And unless it's obvious injury.
Mm-hmm.
If they really obvious an injury, or there's a lot of flies around, or there's a lot of blood, or it's just laying there and can't move, or
yeah, yeah,
something like that, then you could probably try to scoop it up using gloves or a blanket or a sticks or something into something, and then call for your advice on what to do with it.
Okay.
You really shouldn't do anything else. You should give them no food, no water without advice because they you could drown them.
Oh, Lord.
And the wrong diet could make them even sicker because they all have very species-specific foods that they eat.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping them warm, dark, and quiet.
Yeah.
But for the most part, go away a little bit if you can and observe from a distance to see if mom isn't around. And if she or if she's moving them, it may be there for several hours until she can get back.
Makes sense.
Move them one at a time.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And when they move them, I mean, are they moving them like a real distance?
Well, they can. It really depends. Most mothers try to have two den sites so that they can move if something happens to the one or a predator comes along. This is all have two places.
Yeah.
So when the babies get bigger, she moves them to a bigger place.
Makes sense.
Has to pick them up and actually carry them until they're around 7-8 weeks old and follow her. And then, believe it or not, she teaches them to climb the tree.
Wow.
She picks them up in her mouth and puts them up on the tree and then just kind of butts them until they go up.
Oh!
It's really, truly amazing to watch. But you want to, but back to the people running into a possible problem situation.
Yeah.
For yourself first.
Okay.
Because if there was no reason for it and you get bit or scratched, chances are they're going to want the animal euthanized and tested for rabies. 99% of them come back negative.
Really?
So even if they receive the rabies shot, they will not quarantine. They will euthanize and test. So the don't touch. That's the main thing. Don't get bit. Don't get scratched. Use gloves if you must do something. A blanket, a net.
Yeah.
Anything. If nothing else, you can put a garbage can over them upside down, put a rock on the top so they can't stay, or a laundry basket. And then you could get help to get them moved and transported.
And so let's say somebody, you know, finds a raccoon. Who should they call? Like, do you call the police or animal control? Like, who's the smart person to call on this?
I would call, well, if you can, you could call the Department of Environmental Conservation. They've got quite an extensive website.
Okay.
And you can list type of animal and county, and they'll bring up a list of all the rehabbers in the area that accept those species.
Oh, cool.
And that's always available, that list online. Also, veterinarians, SPCAs, all have lists of people.
Cool.
And you could just Google need help for raccoon or need help for something, and a lot of names are going to come up.
That's cool.
And then sometimes you just got to start calling.
Yeah.
Because everybody can't take everything, and some people are full and not take any more, or you get somebody from out of the area. For example, I live in Hyde Park. And there's a new Hyde Park on Long Island.
Yeah, oh, no, that's right.
You would be amazed in a year's time how many calls I get for distressed animals from that area, the new Hyde Park area.
Oh, wow.
They just look up and it comes to Hyde Park. Well, they don't know there's a Hyde Park where I am.
Totally.
You know, and I'm 2 hours from where they are.
And you can't transport them off Long Island anyway, so.
So then I have to look up and refer them to a rehabilitator somewhere on Long Island. And I also get calls from a lot of the New York City area because they think that New Hyde Park is closer to them than anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this happens. I get calls from all over the state.
Wow.
And that's the thing to do is don't be discouraged if you've made 2 or 3 calls and think everybody's giving you the runaround. They really aren't.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're telling you this, as far as I know, this is who you should be calling, who can probably, you know, accept this animal. They all can't.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you say you can always take one more, but there's always that final time when you can't take one more.
Totally. Totally.
In my busiest years, we would have 30, 40, even 50 raccoons here.
Oh, my God.
That's just, you know, that's too many. And I haven't taken any that many recently because I just haven't had the help to do it.
I don't blame you. I mean, that's the thing, too, is the amount of work it takes to do this. You know, this, and it's a really good point about rescues is that, you know, a lot of people will find an animal or whatever, and they're like, oh, here's a rescue place. And they call up and they're booked solid, as you've said, you know, and then they get really pissed and, well, come on, just take one more. And it's like the problem is that you guys are so good at what you do and you take one more and you always take one more. To the point where you have too many to even, you know, be able to treat them all as and give them all as much time as you possibly would like to because you have so many there. And so people that are contacting, it's a really good point. You need to realize that anyone that does any kind of animal rehab or like rescue or anything like that, I mean, these people, this is their life job, basically. I mean, it's a 24/7 thing. It's 365 days a year, and they want to help. So if they're telling you they can't, it's not a personal thing. It just means that they just don't have the facilities at that time, you know? So don't think of these people as being a bad person. Think of them as being someone who's so good at what they're doing that, sadly, they just can't help you at this moment. So I think that's a nice way to put it, or a nice way to think about it, too, you know? Because some people do get really upset by it. Like, you know, I found this kitten, and this kitten rescue can't take it. And it's like, well, the kitten rescue has 200 other kittens, you know? So it's like the numbers game that happens.
I understand they get frustrated. I may be the third or fourth person they've called on the phone.
Yeah.
Tell me, don't give me another number and, that kind of stuff. And I feel so bad, and I end up animals than I really should, and then I've got to call around and see if I can't find somebody to help me out and take them. And now everything is getting so expensive, and rehabilitators are not funded by anybody.
Wow.
Everything we do is either through donations or out of pocket, and most of it's out of pocket.
Stuff adds up.
And we have to pay the vets, the food,
yep,
housing. Like myself that do raccoon rehab,
mm-hmm,
we have to have our pre-exposure rabies vaccines. Mm. Those are well over $1,000.
Wow.
So, and, you know, everybody used to kid me and say to me, oh, there must be a lot of money in that wildlife rehabilitation. And I said, yes, there is. I know. I've put it there.
Totally. I've spent a fortune doing this. Totally.
So, I mean, we're not making any money at it.
Well, that's the thing, too, and I think that people need to realize this as well, is that, you know, a true rescue and rehab place is doing it solely for the animals. These are not people that have a Rolls Royce and a jet in their backyard and living in a mansion and, you know, high on the hog, so to speak, you know. This is tough stuff. I mean, just when I was working with horses, you know, it's like, and they were healthy. It's still, you know, all day, all night. You've got to feed, you've got to clean, you've got to water, you've got to clean, you know, all of it. You've got to exercise them. And I mean, when you're dealing with wild animals, you know, things that aren't tame and domesticated, it's a whole other rigmarole. So, you know, I my hat's off to you and to all rescuers, especially the wildlife rehabbers and rescuers, because I mean, it's so, so needed, and it's such a tough job. And I just want to say thank you for everything you've done and for all the raccoons that you've helped.
Well, I'm grateful to be able to do what I, you know, I figure that a lot of their problems are due to humans, so I, as a human, you know, want to do what I can to turn a little bit of it around anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Even if it's one by one, to get some of them back where they belong.
Totally.
But that, there's just so many facets to it, and we have so many extra rules and regs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to follow the specific. We have to take tests to get our licenses. We have to have specialized caging.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put something in one cage and then put somebody else in that same cage later. A lot of them have got to be dedicated,
mm-hmm,
for a species.
Wow.
So, you know, so you have cages sitting there empty when we're not in the season for that species.
Wow.
And a lot of people with bigger species like fawns and things, mm-hmm, are running out of places to put those too.
Oh, no. Well, Val, I hate to say it, but unfortunately we're out of time. But I've really enjoyed talking to you. I totally want to come up and see your whole little thing one of these years. And I, like I said before, I mean, thank you so much for what you're doing and for the amount of years and dedication that you put into this and, you know, helped out countless, countless wild animals that have just needed a hand from us. And thank you so much, really, from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it. And I've loved talking to you. It was great.
Love talking to you, too, and thank you so much for including us in the quest for humanity, I guess.
I know, right? It's like, well, I mean, raccoons count, too. You know, everyone's always thinking of, like, the, you know, the sexy animals, like the lions and the leopards and, you know, all the African things. But it's like, we have a lot of wildlife in this country, and we need to take care of it because it's all got jobs, and it's all super important to keep us all going. If you guys like, you can always follow me on Instagram on at Animal Instinct Radio. Also on Facebook as Animal Instinct. Also on Twitter as at Food Healer. I will be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, enjoy your Halloween. We're all going to dress up here next Monday. So next time you tune in, make sure you got your best animal costume in and we can all have like a little virtual Halloween party. Until then, just take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.